I'm Leanne Ward.
And I'm Susie Burrell.
And welcome to The Nutrition Couch, a weekly podcast from two of Australia's leading dietitians, bringing you everything that is new in the world of nutrition, diets, and good food. From The Nutrition Couch today, the weight loss dance, doing the rounds on TikTok. It's a fun way to burn calories, or is it actually promoting disordered eating and exercise behaviors? Our nutrition case study today is taking a closer look at the 800 calorie diet. Is this a good option or simply promoting restricted eating? Our product review is a new range of vegetable chips finding their way into the health food aisle, and our listener question is all about how to restart over after you've fallen off the wagon. But first, Susie, what have you been up to this week?
Well, hi, Leanne. I think this week the temperatures have plummeted in Sydney, and all I can think about is having a little mid-year break. It's about a month until school holidays, and so I am rapidly looking at Brisbane and Queensland holiday options to get up and get some sun, because I have quite olivey skin and I find I need a lot of sunlight to keep my vitamin D and my mood on track. So I am literally counting down till I can get up there and get some sun, so I cannot wait until the mid-year holiday.
Yes, love it. And the temperatures have dropped a little bit here as well. Nowhere near as bad as what is around the rest of the country, me being in Brisbane. But yeah, we still have beautiful sunny days during the day. So come on up and enjoy the sunshine and our gorgeous beaches. Bit cool to swim at the moment, but still nice sunbaking on the sand with sunscreen.
Well, I'm looking at you and you're wearing like a singlet top, which is just annoying me from a distance, to be honest.
I did just finish at the gym, so I'm a little bit, I still can't decide if I'm hot or cold yet.
So yeah, bring on some warm weather. But I think the first thing we wanted to talk about today was that there is another trending TikTok movement. It's a weight loss dance. So our resident TikTok reporter, Leanne, take us through.
Yes. So this viral TikTok, we're going to call it the weight loss dance, has sparked controversy left, right and center with our health professionals. It really blew up from a fitness account, a lady overseas somewhere. She has over 3 million followers, and it's essentially her doing this dance in 30 to, I guess, 60 second clips, kind of crunching her abs while dancing at the same time. And I thought it was just a little bit of fun. But when I dug a little bit deeper and I really was started to reading the captions and the comments in the video, Susie, a lot of it was a lot of misinformation. You know, it was you can get a six pack from doing this dance. You can heal your, you know, postpartum ab separation from doing this. There was a lot of misinformation going around. So I'm all for exercise. I'm all for fun exercise. It looks quite high intensity, but just doing something like that for 30 or 60 seconds, I'm not sure how long it actually goes for. And the other thing is, it says she's a fitness user, but it doesn't say she's, you know, a qualified personal trainer or anything like that either. So this dance has sort of blown up online. People are trying it all around the world, I think, and it looks like a whole lot of fun. But I think that some of the captions are quite misleading in terms of the health conditions and the promises that they make.
I think, first of all, dancing is a great way to burn calories. And I think that's where this dance has got itself into trouble, because they've associated doing it in intense bursts of activity with weight loss outcomes. And as we know, it's a little bit more complicated than that. And I think just straight away linking a one-off behavior to weight loss, or in this instance, getting abs, you know, sets particularly young people up for that association between extreme behavior with the goal of specifically losing weight. So I can see why people are a little bit annoyed by it and thinking that it's misleading, particularly to young girls. Because let's be honest, you would have to dance for several hours in a row to have any significant calorie burn. You know, we've all had a night out on the town where we've danced all night and can barely walk, and we know that it's been a great little metabolic workout. But in this instance, at just 30 to 60 seconds of short-term intervals, it's really not going to do anything. And it's definitely not going to support spot fat loss, which is what we've always spoken about. And I think the other issue with this specifically on TikTok is that it's really linking it to abdominal abs and abdominal fat. And if it was that easy to get a six pack, we would all be dancing on the spot for brief periods of time. So I can see why some people are a little bit annoyed that it's making and doing the rounds with young girls.
And in this article that I'm just reading, it says the belly curling exercise can reduce your belly fat. And it's essentially a signature hip thrust move followed by almost like an abdominal crunch. So, you know, hip thrusts are great exercises. Abdominal crunches are great exercises. But these things just in isolation as part of a small couple of minute, a sweaty workout probably isn't going to do too much at the end of the day. And as you mentioned, we can't spot reduce belly fat. So unfortunately, we can't choose where body fat loss comes from. And for the majority of people, it's very genetic where we actually store and hold and lose body fat as well. So I think it is quite misleading, but I'm all for a bit of fun if you just want to, you know, try it as part of a fun type of workout and it's for, you know, a good 10, 20 sort of minute period where you can actually get a bit of a sweat up. I think that's a great form of exercise, but I just think that, yeah, some of these claims here are a little bit misleading, particularly because the TikTok audience is quite young and there are a lot of sort of young impressionable girls online as well.
I think it's interesting with young kids and their movement though, because if you think back to when you were young and definitely when I was a lot younger, it was a big part of life to be going to dancing all the time. I did physical culture, people did ballet. I would argue that younger people were a lot more active with structured activities that would encourage those bursts of high intensity activity. Mm. And my observation of clients and also my own children is that kids today do not necessarily do as much for as long a period of time. So they might enroll in ballet or dancing for a couple of years, but very quickly they move on to other activities and they don't necessarily follow things through. And the downside of that is we've got generations of kids who haven't done a lot of physical training. So they don't do that 1 or 2 hours of intense activity regularly where they're developing skills or in this instant doing a really a lot of high intensity dancing. So that's on one side. So that's why this is almost being considered novel for this current generation, because they didn't grow up in that time where everyone did dancing or everyone did jazz ballet for years and years at a time. But for our adults, the other thing on my mind is let's not forget how powerful dancing can be as a really smart way to move and get great muscle tone and get flexibility. Because if you've gone and done a dance, you know, do it in front of the TV for a couple of songs, you get a serious heart rate up and a serious sweat. So for people who don't enjoy the gym but really know they need to move their body more, don't disregard dancing and dance classes as a great way to exercise, get fitness, improve muscle tone and do all those things, which is great for metabolism in a much healthier way, because of course you're not just doing it for brief periods of time with the hope of suddenly developing a six-pack.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm all for dancing as a form of physical activity. I think it's wonderful. I just sadly can't dance, Susie.
What did you do for your wedding?
Oh, we had dance lessons.
Yeah, I think we did.
We booked a package of 6 and then we added 2 extra on at the end because okay. We were so embarrassed.
So I'm just going to put it out there. If anyone listening to the Nutrition Couch podcast would like to see a video of Leanne dancing on her wedding day, do send us a DM on Instagram and we will put that video up, because I definitely would like to see that.
I could share it, but I am probably maybe 6 champagnes deep as well. And I did forget that some of the steps in the middle.
That's the funny. Some of the funniest friends' activities I've seen at weddings when they've done their dancing after choreographed dance lessons. It is a very funny thing to be doing in general. So we'll look forward to seeing that video.
Thanks, Susie. And that, I guess, leads us into what we've been hearing in our clinic rooms this week, Susie. So there's been a little chat around our clients and a little discussion around what's called the fast 800 calorie diet. Can you bring us up to speed with this new, I guess, diet trend, and why are our clients talking about it?
A lot of listeners probably have heard of it before. It's done the rounds the last couple of years as an 800 calorie prescriptive diet from the Michael Mosley group. And I first became familiar with it when I was working with a bariatric surgeon and his doctor wife handed me this 800 calorie diet book. And to be honest, I was a bit appalled because I was thinking there's no way I would generally recommend an 800 calorie diet for the average person. And since then, my experience has been that I'll have clients who had done it for short periods of time and then find that they've lost weight initially and then they get so very, very hungry that inevitably they rebound. And so I actually have some quite profound issues with that approach. And I'll explain why, because I think it can be a little bit confusing when we've heard so much about intermittent fasting programs before. So if we think back to when we first heard about intermittent fasting, we heard about the 5-2 diet. So that was having 2 especially low calorie, 500 calorie days, and that was followed by regular eating. And there's a good base of research to support sporadic extreme calorie restriction, in which you, a 500 calorie day of say a small coffee, a hard boiled egg and some salad and a vegetable soup is done twice a week, seems to reset a number of the metabolic hormones involved in fat metabolism and has some quite significant benefits when it comes to reducing inflammation in the body and conditions like high cholesterol and blood pressure that go alongside that. So the data on the 5-2 was always based on lifestyle diseases and then a little bit of weight loss as a result. Now, to me, the issue with this 800 calorie plan, which is encourages people to do it all the time, so you don't do it occasionally and revert back to normal eating. This prescription is to eat 800 calories as the default. So in food terms, that would be, for example, an egg on a slice of toast for breakfast, a tuna salad for lunch, a small piece of chicken breast and some vegetables, and maybe a yogurt or a milk coffee for the day. So we are talking a very small amount of food on an ongoing basis. Mm-hmm. And my issue with this is not only does it not have a strong research base to back it up, but to me, it's really promoting extreme dietary restriction all the time. And the downside of that is people are really hungry. They over time have a reduction in metabolic rate as the body is compensating for such a significant reduction in calories. And I think it's unreasonable to be expecting someone to stick to that level of calorie restriction on an ongoing basis. And I would never prescribe it. I never would use it. And I have never seen good results from it. So I'm pretty buyer beware with the 800 calorie approach. I think there's much better, stronger regimes with an evidence base out there to support their use in sustainable, safe weight loss.
And also, like, I just think detrimentally, I think metabolically, you're really going to downregulate your metabolism long term if you're going to do something that low calorie long term. And I mean, it could be, I guess, an option for a small percentage of the population who are sort of in that morbidly obese category, I guess, who for various health conditions just need to get off a quick maybe 10, 15 kilos. But I think for the majority of people who are looking at, you know, the diet trends coming through, who may only say, want to not even need to, but want to lose sort of maybe 5 to 10 kilos just to, I guess, optimize their health or whatever the reason might be, I think that this is probably not a great option for them because they run the risk of damaging their metabolism long term. Because on 800 calories, you probably can't get anywhere near the protein in that's required to actually support you metabolically, let alone things like fiber and complex carbohydrates, which are going to help you go to the bathroom. So I think, yeah, there are a lot of limitations for this diet. And also, it was written by a doctor, not a dietitian. And I mean, I think doctors are wonderful health professionals, but they don't go to university for 4 or 5 years like dietitians do to learn the intricate ins and outs of nutrition science, do they?
Well, this is the reason I always like to listen to practicing clinicians, dietitians who are working at the coalface with people every day. Because I know, as do you, that it is very difficult to follow an 800 calorie diet. And you're right, the only instances where we do prescribe it is pre-surgery for bariatric patients or people perhaps having abdominal surgery where they will use a meal replacement program like OptiFast for a very set period of time under supervision with a dietitian to reduce the size of the liver and improve surgery outcomes. Mm-hmm. At most, I've only ever seen it used for 2, maybe 4 weeks for a really morbidly obese person who doesn't move a lot or can't move because they're physically impaired. But if we think, so the average female, the smallest most inactive female I would see would maybe burn 1,000 a day, more likely 12 to 1,400. Of course, often your clients are a lot more active. And then if we're adding on top of that some calories for activity, so if their baseline is say 1,200 and then they're exercising, we are looking here at almost half their requirement by expecting them to follow an 800 calorie diet. And I have fundamental issues with promoting such strict restriction not based on a research base to show that there's outcomes with this because people have to weigh everything. They can't eat out. It doesn't fit into life. And then, of course, what happens, Leanne, is if they've had a cheat meal or they've had a birthday and enjoyed some cake or a few glasses of wine, they've completely blown their calories out. They retain all the extra fluid that comes when they've got more carbohydrate on board. They feel like a failure and it promotes that dieting approach. There are much, much better programs out there that are going to give you much better sustainable results without making you feel tired, hungry, and obsessed with food than that plan. And I've never once seen a good long-term outcome. And if anything, I've seen several clients who achieve some weight loss, you know, 8 to 10 kilos over 3-4 months, they could do it. And then now they really struggle because I believe there's been some profound changes to their metabolic rate because of this extended period of starvation.
Absolutely. Yeah. So really, I think it's more of a short-term diet for a select few people who may need some quick weight loss for surgery, shrinkage of the liver, that sort of thing, like we talked about. It's definitely not a lifestyle approach because But who can eat 800 calories for life? You're going to be starving. Mentally, it's going to be an absolute struggle. And as you said, you can't go out. You can't go, there's no alcohol in this plan. There's no going and getting an ice cream with your kids. There's no going out and celebrating your birthday or Mother's Day or Christmas or whatever it might be. So it really is the true definition of a diet where it's overly restrictive and not something that's actually going to last long term. So we really want more of those lifestyle approaches versus those diets, because I always say to my clients, the quicker it comes off, the quicker it tends to come back on again.
I love that. I couldn't say that better myself. And if a client needs to get ready for a wedding or lose some weight quickly just for personal aesthetics, getting into a special dress for a big occasion, I can get 2 to 3 kilos off people really quickly by just reducing the load of food in the diet, keeping portions really small, utilizing a lot more foods like soups and vegetable juices, you know, and easily do that without having to go on such an extreme diet for a long period of time. And at most, you know, I'm just thinking even working with athletes in the days we had to get clients to make weight jockeys or weightlifters or boxers, at most we would starve them for a week, maybe two. We would never do it for an extended period of time, knowing the damage that it can cause. So I would never even use this for any period of time, not even a week, because I could do it using better methods that didn't put you on such a plan of restriction and still get the couple of kilos off quickly if I needed to.
And that's the thing, it's not personalized. Like, you can't just say, go and eat 800 calories, because you look at the average Australian, and I think, what's the weight of an average Australian these days? Is it around 80 kilos?
I was going to say 80.
You know, but also, who's average? I'm not average. I'm 6'1". like what even is average these days? So we can't follow these diets that prescribe these prescriptive calorie amounts when every single person is different. You know, I had a client who's just finished up with me in my 12-week coaching program, and she was 4'11". I've got another client who's 5'11". Like, there's a big discrepancy just in terms of activity levels and requirements based on just their height differences as well. So I think that, yeah, using these diets that are so easily
restrictive.
Yeah.
It's restrictive
and also not personalized. Yeah. Yeah.
And I think because we have the conversation, people will say, oh, diets are bad. Now, we all eat a diet. All diets aren't bad. Some diets are great, but restrictive diets like this, absolutely, have got far more cons than pros. And I would say that this is in that group of overly restrictive diets that we're definitely not a fan of. So moving on to more exciting things, our favorite segment, broccoli chips. There are some new veggie chips making their way in mainstream supermarkets. Now, I had seen these chips a few different times in like health food stores and kind of specialty grocers. And then I was just shopping yesterday in Woolies, and there they were in the mainstream section of the health food store. And there's a whole range of them. I've picked out broccoli puffs today as one of them, but there's a cauliflower version. There's quite a few different ones. And I think the thing that stood out to me is that they look healthy. Because they're vegetables, you know, how could they not be healthy? They retailed for $4 and the weight was just 50 grams. It's very, very light, as you can imagine, just a veggie puff. And I thought, I think that these products will be really, really popular because people straight away think, oh, well, veggies and chips, I'm combining things, you know, one I need to eat more of and one I love to eat, so let's combine it. But, you know, a closer look, Leanne, and I don't know if they're really so healthy, and this is where you do have to be careful. I always say to my clients, if it looks like a chip and tastes like a chip, it's probably a chip. And in the case of these broccoli ones per serve, the fat per serve is coming in only at 8 grams, but they're still 28% fat. Now, that's exactly the same as regular chips coming in, and if even a little bit higher than some of the healthier kind of legume chips, which might come in even at 15, 20% fat. And the ingredients, there's broccoli, yes, but there's also a fair whack of rice bran oil and processed ingredients. And they're also made in Thailand. So I don't believe they're Australian ingredients. It doesn't state that. And so, of course, we have a lot of listeners asking about the country of origin of the food. And I think the thing more than anything, Leanne, that stood out to me is that I would never pay myself $4 for a very light bag of chips, which are basically a bit of broccoli and oil. So I think just buyer beware a little bit here. Just because they sound healthy doesn't mean that I would put them in that healthy category. And second, I would never suggest a client's paying $4 for an individual packet of snack food that doesn't really offer much in the way of protein or dietary fiber, which is going to keep them full for any extended period of time. Have you seen them?
Yeah, I'm just looking at them now, Susie. And I mean, they might be slightly healthier than what's on the market. But again, I always think about these health halos, right? You pick up a bag of broccoli puffs or chips or whatever you want to call them, it's only half the serving size in the packet. So you pick up a bag of them. The packet's only small. It's only, 56 grams. There's two serving sizes per container. Show me anyone that's going to eat just half of those broccoli puffs. It's not going to happen. So 140 calories for half the packet is, it's actually quite good. It's quite low calorie, but everyone's going to eat the whole bag. Let's be honest here. People don't know how to stop after just half a bag of broccoli puffs. The majority of us are going to enjoy the whole bag. That's 280 calories. That's close to 300 calories. You could eat a low-fat, high-protein yogurt for that, plus an apple, plus some carrot sticks and a bit of hummus. Like volume eating wise, it's not a great choice if you're looking for something to look after your health. I think I'd rather just have a couple of normal potato chips, a couple of bits of broccoli with some dip or something like that, and maybe a couple of spoons of yogurt. I think that in terms of fullness is going to fill me up a lot more because, I just don't think that I'm a big fan of volume eating, Susie. So I like to eat a lot of volume for sort of lower type of calories. And again, these are so overly processed that they don't exactly mirror what broccoli is. And as you said, there's a lot of added fats and salt in there as well. So they are a chip. Put it that way. They're a healthier version of a chip. There's slightly more fiber. There's 2 grams per serve. If you were to eat the whole packet, there's 4 grams. That's a good amount of fiber in a snack choice. But I do think, the calories are close to 300 calories per packet. I definitely think there's some better options out there on the market.
If we compare
especially
that
for $4 something.
The calorie load of broccoli, which is virtually nothing. So if you're having the broccoli or steaming it or putting some chili on it or even making your own chips with some extra virgin olive oil, the calories are much, much lower. I would count broccoli as negligible calories if it was consumed in its natural form. So 300 calories for that very light packet, when you feel it, you'll see what I'm talking about. There's not much in there.
And there's no $4. Way you can just eat half of it.
No, and this is a really interesting section of the supermarket because we've seen more and more legume-based chips, pea-based chips, chickpea chips, I'm seeing them every week and very few of them are significantly healthier than what I would say is one of the healthiest potato chips, which is just a potato with some oil and salt, which some of them have very sort of clean ingredient list. A lot of our listeners, I'm sure, have air fryers actually, and you can make some amazing vegetable chips in an air fryer, season them yourself, even use some herbs and spices, and then you're going to make a much more nutritious, fiber-rich chip yourself and get all those benefits of the vegetables that you're actually looking for without buying relatively expensive snack food that's not really giving you very much. And it's arguable actually how healthy they are. So they're definitely not on my shopping list. They won't be on my clients' meal plans, but I'm sure that I'm going to get a lot of questions about them because they are front and central in the supermarkets. So it'll be interesting to see how they go and if they're any more popular than broccoli itself. But actually, broccoli is our second favorite vegetable in Australia. Potatoes number one, and then broccoli comes in really high. So we're actually quite a high consumer of broccoli in Australia, which is interesting to me. I didn't think that would come in so high. So we will see if it survives. And as I said, there's a range of them, so you can try the different types, but not on my list at the moment as products to necessarily spend your money on.
And just one more interesting point I saw at the front of the packet, Susie, it says gluten-free, which, is fine if people need to eat gluten-free if you have celiac disease. The other health claim on the front of the packet is whole grain, which is an interesting health claim considering it's basically broccoli and oils.
So it's interesting since it's not a grain product.
Exactly. So I wouldn't consider it a whole grain at all. And I think that's, I don't know how they've even come to put that health claim on the packet, but I don't think there's any real regulations around health claims, which again, for our listeners at home, don't look at what's on the front of packet marketing because they will sell you whatever they want to sell you to sell their product. Flip it over and actually read the ingredient list and establish for yourself if this is actually a healthier product. And for 2 grams of fiber, I think you're going to get a hell of a lot more fiber in other ways. You can roast your own little, roasted chickpeas up with a bit of flavors and seasoning, and that will give you a heck of a lot more fiber as well, or some veggie sticks with some dip is going to be a lot more fiber as well. So I definitely wouldn't consider it a whole grain or a source of whole grains, but very small amount of fiber for a snack choice, I would say. Moderate.
And I do tend to check when I'm looking at frozen vegetables or pre sort of sliced veggies, and in this case, where the country of origin is, and they're definitely not Australian. It's looking like they're coming from Thailand. So if that's important to you, I'd say that, they're probably coming from overseas ingredients.
So moral of the story, Susie, I prefer to put my broccoli into a stir fry, and if I want some potato chips, I will have my very favorite brand. I love my Red Rock Deli chips, and I'll have a couple of them and enjoy the heck out of them and move on with my day.
Well, Red Rock Deli Plains, their ingredient list, I think, is the cleanest of all the chips available. They're the ones that have just got the oil, potato, salt, and they taste good. And so I'm with you. Enjoy the ones that you like occasionally in the right amounts rather than kidding yourself into thinking that a processed version of a and broccoli is healthier.
And Susie, that brings us up to our listener question for the week. So we love that you guys have started to send us DMs answering our little Q&A polls and our Instagram stories. Don't forget, if you don't follow us on socials, we're at the Nutrition Couch Podcast. Give us a follow and send us your listener questions. Each week on the podcast, we answer a listener question. And this week, Susie, one of our lovely listeners has asked us, when you have lost control and you need to completely restart, where should the first step be? What's your opinion on this one?
Oh, we hear it all the time. And I often, the clients will come into a consult and they'll say to me, I'm completely off the wagon, nothing's working, I'm going really badly. And I will start to quiz them a little bit. And the truth is, maybe they've had a meal off or even a weekend off. And there's been actually a lot of good decisions that have been made. But I think this comes back into our pre-programmed dieting influence over many years, where we're either on something or we're off it. So it's a very all or nothing approach. And the issue with this, of course, is that it doesn't allow for life when you can't be a perfectionist with your diet, because, and nor would you want to be, because there is times where higher calorie foods can and should be enjoyed and consumed. So the first thing is to really look at your the actual evidence to say, well, actually, am I telling myself a true story here? Am I really off the rails? Have I just enjoyed a meal that's not perfect? And trying to get rid of that idea that a dietary success is about perfection. And I say, there's no such thing as dietary perfection. It just doesn't exist. It's about consistently and consistently making better choices. So if you have, say, 21 meals a week or 28 meals a week, if 25 of those are pretty good, you're on track. So just looking at the numbers overall and see. And then if I'm giving my clients practical advice, you know what I say to them? I say, just get back on. Make your next choice a good one. And it's as simple as that, and it's breaking it down rather than that global thinking of, oh my goodness, everything's terrible, to actually maybe one meal choice or one day's decisions weren't so great because of sometimes factors outside our control. But what we do have control of, and when we do have that, is the next meal or the next decision, and just starting to break it down into those individual decisions rather than global statements, which are often not quite true anyway.
Couldn't agree more. And I talk a lot about perfectionism and that all or nothing approach in my podcast as well, Susie. And my, I guess, question back to our listener would be, if you feel like you've completely lost control, that's probably a good indication of that what you were doing wasn't realistic or achievable long-term for you anyway. So I would actually have a look at what you were doing, because if you completely lost control, you fell off the wagon, everything's gone out the window, what you were doing wasn't sustainable. So take a look at that, take it back a couple of steps and actually work out something that is going to be sustainable and maintainable for you long term. And as you said, Susie, we eat so many times every single day. We have multiple opportunities every single day to nourish our body. Most of us wake up and we have breakfast, snack, lunch, snack, dinner, snack. You know, we might be eating 5 or 6 times a day. If one meal or two, a couple of meals off track, you know, you might have a great breakfast, a good morning tea, a good lunch, a piece of chocolate cake in the afternoon, and then some Uber Eats for dinner or something like that. You've still had 3 great meals, and granted 2 have been off track. You could be 20, 40, 60% of the way there. 60% is better than 0%. So really look at, when you're looking to get back on track, look at what drove you off track to begin with. You know, was it what you were doing was so strict that you weren't actually able to sustain that long term? And the next step is, as we mentioned, we eat multiple times every single day. You don't need to wait till Monday to get back on track. You don't need to wait to the 1st of January to start a new diet. The very next meal, the very next thing you put in your mouth, make that a nourishing choice. You have so many options every single day to nourish your body. Make the next one count. That's as easy and as hard as it is to get back on track, because so many of us are stuck in that all or nothing mindset approach that, you know, when we do fall off track, we feel like we have to wait again till Monday. If you've had a crappy weekend and it's Sunday lunch, have a great Sunday lunch. Make yourself a beautiful, nourishing salad, roast up some veggies, you know, make a homemade dinner rather than going, well, the weekend's been a write-off, I may as well get Macca's for dinner and then start again on Monday. Get out of that mindset where you have to constantly restart again every Monday and you're constantly off the rails every weekend. I think that's one of the biggest limiting mindsets for so many people, and why so many people feel like they lose control, because what they were aiming for in terms of that perfection was never achievable in the beginning anyway.
that lends itself to a great discussion about having some of those reset meals. So you talked about a salad. So some other ones that fit well is if you've had a really heavy day of eating and you don't know what to do, rather than order the Uber Eats or the McDonald's because you feel off track, my defaults might be a vegetable omelette with a couple of eggs and just loads of veggies, because that's going to give you lots of fiber and protein and be quite low in calories. I love a soup. So keeping some of those pouch soups we've spoken about before on the potty, which are low calorie and really rich in vegetables, or even a vegetable juice in the morning. So you might have had a really heavy night of eating and not be feeling amazing the next morning. Rather than reach for the bacon and egg roll, go and order a beautiful fresh vegetable, beetroot, celery, carrot juice, packed full of nutrition. It's going to get rid of some of that fluid that you're carrying from eating too much processed food and get you back on track really quickly. So I do work. I love having those kind of reset meals, which just put you back on track because you know you're putting back into the body some of those key lighter nutrients that you need with lots of fluid to flush out your digestive system and get your tummy feeling good again.
And the other option is, and you know, this might be a little bit controversial, you know, there's a lot of people who think that fasting can promote disordered eating and, you know, you stop listening to your body and that sort of thing. But I've had clients who say to me, you know, I had a massive lunch and then there was birthday cake, and it was my birthday yesterday, Susie, and this was me on Saturday. Literally, like, my husband and I went out for dinner on Friday night, and I had a bigger meal, obviously being out at a restaurant. Sunday lunch, we had two meals out that day, and I got to dinner time and I'm like, sometimes it's okay to not eat. Like, I got to dinner time and I was like, I am so full, I am so bloated, I couldn't even think about food. And my hubby's like, what do you want for dinner? I was like, I don't want anything. Like, literally, I'm just gonna make a cup of green tea and call it a night. So actually not eating, if you've had a huge weekend of eating, is absolutely okay as well. Or waking up the next morning and not having anything to eat. Again, if you don't feel hungry, if your body's telling you, hey, slow down, I'm actually still digesting all of that food that you gave me over the weekend, you might not feel the need to eat breakfast. And I think it really comes back to a case by case or an individual basis as to if you want to eat or not. Some of us prefer to just have a lighter meal. Others, you know, might prefer to not have anything at all. And I think that that's an absolutely okay option as well. If that works for you and it doesn't promote, you know, that restrictive mindset in you, I think that it's perfectly fine to go, you know what, I've actually had quite a lot of food this weekend. I've been snacking and grazing all day long. I don't actually feel like I need to have anything for dinner. I think I can just go to bed and call it a night. That is an option as well, Susie, isn't it?
I've got a great tummy tea. The one I like is called, it's probably not got the best name actually, but it's from the UK, so they might not be as regulated as we are, but it's called Slim Me, and it's the English tea company Slim Me Tea. But I love it because it's like a tummy tea. So I'm like you, when I've had a really big meal and I'm just feeling a bit gluggy, I'll have one of those, and I find it just settles my stomach down. So having a default green tea or peppermint tea or one of those kind of tummy friendly teas, I find as well, is a really nice way to kind of reset and get back on track and just settle the tummy. But I'm like you, I'm a big fan of the fasting when you've had an overindulgence in calories as a bit of a buffer, and it's a really strong strategy a lot of my clients use to take away the guilt from eating too much, but then getting and feeling empowered to take control when you do, so you know the steps to take rather than feeling out of control with your food.
And I am a really big believer, Susie, in reflection is key. So actually reflect on the situation. What happened? Why did you feel the need to have a huge weekend or eat so much? Or like, what happened? Why did you completely go off track? Was there peer pressure, social eating? Did you just completely eat while you were distracted and you were just, you know, shoveling in food while watching Netflix? What was it that caused you to go off track? I think reflection is so key, and so many of us don't stop to reflect that those behaviors continue to happen again and again and again and again, and we can never actually achieve our goals because we never stop to reflect on, hey, what actually happened last time we went off track. So I think that that's a really powerful question to ask yourself. Why did I go off track and what happened, and how can we make a change for next time to, I guess, prevent that or make that, you know, not as severe as next time, put it that way.
100%. And I think that's these are all strategies that will help a lot of people, because I know we've all found ourselves in that position, particularly on a Sunday morning or Monday morning after a big weekend. So try a few of those things and let us know how you go.
Absolutely. And Susie, that sadly brings us to the end of the Nutrition Couch for another episode. So listeners, if you haven't done so already, please subscribe to the podcast so you get us delivered in your inbox every Sunday morning. And we would absolutely be so grateful if you could leave us a positive review or rating in the Purple Apple Podcast iTunes app. So that would be very, very, we would be very thankful and grateful for that. Also, as we mentioned, don't forget to follow us on Instagram and Facebook. We're at the Nutrition Couch Podcast, and we will see you, listeners, same time, same place next week. Thank you for listening.
Bye.